Hello, my name is Ed Travers, teaching pastor of Life Point Westerville. Just want to welcome you to Life Point today. We've obviously had a great morning celebrating six families who have dedicated their children, and there's nothing more exciting than watching children grow up, and our commitment as a church is to help serve our families as they raise their kids to love Jesus.
So listen, I have a couple favors that I need from you guys today. Some of you guys don't know me very well, so you're just going to have to trust me on this. I need your help, and I'm really asking you to do something amazing. So my bride, this is a little picture of Tammy and I. Tammy and I have been married for 20 years, but just so happens today is her birthday. So if you see this pretty blonde lady walking by, you may go up to her and say, happy birthday. And you know, you make her feel really special, and then you're doing me a favor. So hey, thank you so much. Secondly, so since we launched in January, we've had a lot of people come into the church who've been asking me questions about, you know, hey, so what? How did you guys get here? Or what's the vision of the church? Or what's this all about? Or how can we get more involved? Well, we have a class coming up in April from the 8th through the end of the month. It's a four-week class. It's only 1 hour, and it meets right here in the building from 11:30 to 12:30. It's called Discovering Life. This kind of operates as our membership class, but really it's for anybody who kind of wants to know what we're all about. I'm there, so, you know, teaching, so you can kind of get to know me. I can kind of get to know you a little bit. But here's where the ask comes in on my part to yours. We are going to have childcare for that, you know, for that 1 hour, 11:30 to 12:30, and we're going to serve food. So I need to know if you're coming. So what you can do, I think in your listening guide today, you can look at the listening guide and you can kind of reply that way. Or in your little Connect card, sometime today, while I'm speaking, write your name down on the Connect card. And if you're thinking about coming to Discovering Life, write down how many people, how many kids would be involved in that, and stick it in one of the black boxes on your way out, or at Guest Central, drop it off. That way I'll get in contact with you, but it'll be a big help to me as we prepare for Discovering Life. So those are the two favors. Most importantly, tell my wife that she's awesome. So anyway, I'm really grateful that you're here. I was thinking about a conversation I had a couple years back. I was invited to a wedding to a friend of mine that I grew up with, and I've known him since I was in middle school. And I haven't seen him often since I've graduated high school, but we run into each other now and again. And at the wedding, a lot of the people that we ran around with all came to the wedding. So at the reception, I'm seeing people I haven't seen, you know, in 20-some years, and kind of catching up, that kind of a thing. Well, this one particular conversation stuck out in my brain as I was preparing for this message today, and it was this one. It was this guy. I went up to him. I'm like, hey, man, how are you doing? I'm like, I haven't seen you since graduation, and we're kind of, you know, making small talk. I started asking him, hey, where are you living now? And he tells me where he's living, and tell me about your wife and your kids. And so he's telling me all about that and what he's doing for a living. I'm hearing all about his life, and he looks at me and says, Ed, what do you do? I said, I'm a pastor. And he looked at me and goes, you are a pastor? His eyes were... I think if I had said, I work for the government and I spy on other countries, he would have been less surprised. He's just shocked. And I remember thinking, what? Like, seriously, you can't imagine me as a pastor? And I think the answer was no. So I thought about that. And I think if you had taken a snapshot of my life, maybe during high school, you probably would think the same thing. And I think in my head, I would say, God, you know, why did you choose me to be a guy who's going to help others to find Jesus? Why would you pick a guy like me to help, you know, share the word on a regular basis and to lead others and lead families? And to be honest with you, when I look back at my life and you see snapshots, the snapshots really don't tell the whole picture. But if you do take a snapshot, they do tell a story. And we're in a series called Rebel, and it's about the life of Jacob. And in this series, here's what we're going to say every week, that God's perfect plan of redemption includes imperfect and broken people. God's perfect plan of redemption includes imperfect and broken people. Jacob is one of the patriarchs of the faith. God chose to reveal himself to the world through the nation of Israel, and Jacob's name was changed to Israel, and that's where they get their namesake, his family line. This incredible guy, we're still talking about him today, and babies are named Jacob still because he's one of the most famous people who ever lived. But if you look at his life, you find out that there are some snapshots that you're thinking, why would God choose Jacob? And so that's what we're talking about today. So no matter where you're at, if you are someone who, you know, you grew up in church, you grew up in Sunday school, and you knew the stories of Jacob, or maybe this is your first time being in a church, Here's a question that keeps popping up in my head. Why does God choose people like Jacob or people like Ed or even maybe what is God trying to do in your life? Maybe God's trying to choose you for something. And then we look at our lives and think, well, why would God choose such imperfect people? So today, we're going to look at a couple snapshots of his life, and I'm hoping and praying that God will speak to us through that. So let's pray together and let's dig in, okay? Father, such a beautiful morning just to see the families come around and lift up their children and just commit to raising them to know you. But we know, God, that you have to speak, that you have to communicate to the families and to the children, and you got to communicate to us even today. I pray that through your Holy Spirit and by your word, I pray you would teach us something about yourself and reveal yourself even more to us. We ask that in your son's name. Amen. Well, listen, if you have a listening guide, open it up to Genesis. Open up your listening guide. You can follow along, but open up a Bible or an app, or you can listen along as we look at Genesis 25 and 27 today. And let me give you kind of the overview, a snapshot, if you will, of Jacob's life. So way back, Adam and Eve, remember, you know, they sinned. And because they sinned, you know, there was a brokenness in the relationship with God. That's what happened. God is holy and perfect, and he's always wanted a people who would follow him. And so that's what his intention has always been. But Adam and Eve, because they sinned, they are now broken. And because they're not holy and God is holy, there's a brokenness in this relationship. We all inherited that nature from Adam and Eve. So as the things went on, you know, God finally said, look, this place is so corrupt. We're going to start over with Noah. Then Noah kind of, you know, through his family line, repopulated the earth. And then God is going to reveal himself to the nations through one family. He finds a man named Abraham and says, because of his faith, I'm choosing Abraham to be the nation, his family line, where I'm going to reveal to the rest of the world who I am, my character, my goodness, my mercy, my justice, my holiness, all the things that God is, he's going to reveal through this family line. Then he has Isaac. Isaac grows up, meets a girl named Rebecca, falls in love, and they're going to have a family. She gets pregnant, and she's got these two babies wrestling around in the womb. And so because she has heard the story of God through Abraham, you know, she goes to seek of God and say, God, what is going on in here? And God gives her an oracle, a prophecy of what's happening. There are two nations, which means that these two brothers, these twins, are going to have a family line that basically are going to be at war against each other. And God says the older is going to serve the younger, which is exactly opposite of what was true of the culture, that it was always the older who would come first. But God tells them the older is going to serve the younger. Well, then those two brothers grow up, and, you know, they, of course, are kind of rivals, and then, you know, Jacob kind of tricks him into getting the birthright, which I'll explain, and then later tricks him to get the blessing of God through on his life, which I'll explain, and it literally, they were at odds to the point where Jacob was fleeing for his life. So this is Jacob, and he is far from perfect. So let's kind of dig in, and as I'm going through this, I'm going to just give you some snapshots again on this overview of his part of his life. And the first thing I want to say is this, is that dysfunction can be very subtle. Dysfunction can be very subtle. Remember, Rebecca has already heard that somehow Jacob, the younger one, and his older brother Esau, somehow Jacob is going to be the one who's going to get, you know, he's going to be above his brother somehow. And chapter 25, verse 27, it says this. Now, when the boys grew up, Esau was a skillful hunter, a man of the field, while Jacob was a quiet man dwelling in the tents. Isaac loved Esau because he ate of his game, but Rebekah loved Jacob. Now, when you read that and you go right through the next verse and you get into this crazy story about Stu, which I can't wait to tell you about, but you kind of read through this and you go, huh. But for me, it's like red light. Like flags, sirens, like something's going wrong here. And you read this, you think, okay, so the parents actually chose favorites on the boys. Isaac, who's an outdoors guy, loves to hunt and cook and all, you know, I mean, grab game and that's his thing. Like Esau is all about it. So he kind of chooses Esau as his favorite. And then Jacob loves to be quiet and in the tents, you know, cook with mom. And Rebecca chooses Jacob as her favorite. And you read that and you think, this is not going to go well. You know it. And that's the thing about favorites. I wrote this down. When parents do that, the dysfunction of that, it puts a real pressure on the boys to live up to their parents' wishes and the things that they affirm. And it really caused a problem with this family. I think I can identify a little bit. I don't know that my parents chose favorites because there were six of us. So I don't know that you can choose favorites out of six. You're just herding them around, to be honest with you. But my brother, there's something that I witnessed in my brother's life, and now, you know, he's getting close to 50, so I've watched this over a long time. My dad was a very tough fella. He was a military guy. He played football in college for 1 year, and he was a Golden Gloves boxer. So he always affirmed things that were tough. He didn't really do well figuring out how all six of us, what we were about, so he would just kind of affirm the things he really thought were important, so we had to kind of get his affection that way. I remember the story, my brother, Phil, here's a picture of him when he was in the military. Phil is probably the toughest guy I've ever known in my life. He's just a strong dude. He grew up great athlete. He got a lot of fights in the neighborhood. He played football. He boxed, of course, and, you know, just he's that tough guy. When he was in Little League, I remember he was kind of like one of the stars of the team. My dad and I were at the game, and we're watching the game, and so the third baseline, imagine it's up this way, and we're in the bleachers this way, and my brother's coming around third base, coming down home. And there's a ball, you know, it's going this way in the infield, and someone is throwing the ball home. The catcher, who's kind of a bigger guy, because usually you put big dudes at catcher, so he's all padded up, you know, he's got the helmet on, everything's ready to go. The ball comes in, and the ball beats my brother down the line. So we're sitting here watching. You could see my brother's face. He literally gritted his teeth, and he flew as fast as he could, head first, dove into the catcher. And this is Little League, like 12 years old. He just literally knocked the kid clean off his feet, helmet flying, the glove is flying, the ball is flying. He knocks him over, then he lands on top of him, gets up, and slams his foot on home plate while he's looking down at him. I'm like, you know, I'm his little brother, like, yeah! You know, but here's the thing. My dad told that story over and over and over. Do you know what my son did? Do you know how tough my son is? Well, here's what happened to my brother. He became the tough guy. He had to live up to that what was affirmed. And because he was skilled enough to actually pull it off, he became this tough dude. I have watched him endure some incredible things in his life. Two of his closest friends died before they were 25. My brother was in a horrible motorcycle accident that almost cut his foot off. I've watched him. He never complains about the pain. But this is the thing. He also endured his wife almost dying giving birth. His first son almost died in a diabetic coma. He's seen all these things. I've never seen my brother cry. He is rock hard. So one time we were talking, this is recently, and he was telling me, he said, you know, Ed, I can't even admit I'm wrong. He goes, even when I know I'm wrong, I can't admit it. He goes, I think somehow if I admit I'm wrong, then somehow it admits weakness. This is now in his psyche. It's the way he believes, he's supposed to live like. And I don't think it was my dad's fault. It was just a subtle dysfunction. But somehow, that's how it works. It's so subtle. And now my brother has a trouble even admitting that he might need Jesus. Because to come to Christ, you got to admit you're a sinner. But that would be weakness. It's just tough for him to even comprehend. Isn't that crazy? The second thing about, you know, the story of Jacob and Esau, and this is one of my favorite stories in the Old Testament. This shows you how manipulative Jacob can be. He's the little brother, and as a little brother, I totally get his skill set. Here's what happens, verse 29, and this is what I would say. Stew is never free. If you don't hear anything else today, hear me when I say that. Stew is never free. Verse 29, now once when Jacob was cooking stew, Esau came in from the field, and he was exhausted. Now Esau said to Jacob, let me eat some of that red stew, for I am exhausted. Therefore his name is called Edom, which means red. Now Jacob said, sell me your birthright now. Esau said, I'm about to die. Of what use is the birthright to me? And Jacob said, well, swear to me now. So he swore to him and sold his birthright to Jacob. And then Jacob gave Esau the bread and lentil stew, and he ate it and drank it and rose and went away. And thus Esau despised his birthright. Now look, birthright doesn't mean a lot to our culture. But to that culture, here was the plan. If there were lots of children, the firstborn male got a double portion of the inheritance from their family. That's not all. After dad is gone, that oldest becomes like the judge or the leader of the family. So all roads lead to the oldest. That was Esau's birthright. He comes in from the field. He's working hard. Now imagine, you know, he's young, probably impetuous, and he's famished, he comes in, and there's Jacob, who's cooking this stew, and it's awesome, probably smells great. He comes, you know, Esau comes in, he's like, oh my gosh, it smells so great, will you give me some? No, this is mine, you know? And Esau's like, well, could I just have some? No, you know? Because little brothers love it when we have leverage, you know? And so he finally says, look, I'm have to have some. And Jacob turns it into his leverage and says, I tell you what, Esau, I'll make you a deal. You sell me your birthright, which was not Jacob's right at all, but trying to get something that doesn't belong to him. And he says, I'll give you some stew if you sell me your birthright. And finally, Esau says, fine. What difference does it make if I'm dead anyway? So sell me the birthright or you can have it. Just give me some stew. He eats the stew and then he walks away. He's like, I don't even care about that birthright anyway. He despises it. What a manipulator Jacob is. I totally get him. You know, when you have a brother who's like a great, tough dude and, you know, you can't really beat him up. So there's no leverage that way. You have to leverage everything you've got. I totally get Jacob. It's kind of a jerk thing to do, to be honest with you. But look at Esau. Do you know, in the Old Testament, God chose this nation, Israel, not because Israel was awesome, because God is awesome. He's trying to reveal who he is to the nations. So he chooses this people. If you follow me and you follow me well, I am going to let the nations know who I am. But listen, if you turn away from me, if you go into idolatry, I'm going to take my hand of blessing off your life and the nation's going to have problems. Therefore, the nations out here will know that I'm a serious God. That's what happened. And you know who people knew the God was? God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. No one said Esau. Nobody names their kids Esau anymore. Do you know why? Because he sold his birthright for stew. I think the reason stew isn't free is because, look, I don't think Esau understood the nature of God, but let me tell you what I've learned just as I've been growing. We all have desires because we were made to have desires, but all of our desires are corrupted by sin. Even an appetite. Imagine this appetite just for food. If it's taken the wrong way, it literally ends up corrupted. The desire for relationships, the desire for affirmation, the desire for esteem, the desire to make a difference in the world, the desire, you know, for sex. I mean, anything that we want, all of our desires, we know if they're taken the wrong direction, they will take you in a place that you do not want to go. That's what sin does to us. And here's the thing. All of us, because we have desires, we are going to see an immediate gratification thing come onto our, you know, into our periphery, and we're going to be tempted to jump at that stew. And I'm telling you, I've seen it one too many times. I've seen it in my own life. When you give into that temptation, oftentimes it takes you down a road. It doesn't mean God can't use you. It just means it's going to cost you something very big. And I would say to you in the room, if you are have a thing in your life and you know you've been kind of flirting with that temptation, listen, cut it off. It's not worth the long term of what God has planned for your life. I think if God had come to Esau and said, Esau, seriously, I've got this huge plan for your life. Don't sell the birthright. Esau may have said, well, maybe. But we're all given that opportunity. I do identify with this. I've seen this in my life. I have a brother named James who I've talked about. This is a picture of us when we were teenagers. I chose this picture to share with you on purpose because it was about that age that an opportunity came to my brother. We'll call that a door that was opened. Just as a young age. And he walked through that door. And that door that he went through led him into a life of addiction. He spent, once he turned 17, he chose alcohol as his thing. And he spent 10 years literally as an alcoholic. And it destroyed his life. He destroyed relationships. The scars on his life are immense. He did find Jesus, which I've told that story, and I'll tell that many times because it had such an impact on my life. He has been clean for the last, I think it's 20 years. He's helped lead other people who are in addiction to follow Jesus. But he would tell you, I'm sure if he was here today, that the scars that cost him. He has no idea what God may have done through his life, but the scars that came through those 10 years of just tasting a little bit of stew drove him into something awful. And I would say in the same way, Esau had no idea what he was doing. But we get the benefit of hearing it now, right? The last thing I want to say about this family that's far from perfect and Jacob, if you skip over to chapter 27 and verse 41, I read this several times and I kept thinking of it through the lens of Jacob. But then once I saw the last verse, I started to see it through the eyes of Rebekah. And so here's the line I want you guys to remember, is that the need for control is a double-edged sword. Now think about that and listen to Rebekah. What happened in chapter 27 is that Esau is now older. Isaac, his father, is to the point where he knows he has very few days left. It says his eyes are dim. He cannot see any longer, and he knows his days are short. So he tells Esau, come to me, Esau. Go and take your bow and arrow and go get the game that we love. Make our favorite meal that we love to share together, and then I'm going to give you the blessing. Now, the blessing wasn't exactly like the birthright. The blessing was this idea that you go to God, and God is going to give some blessing, some future prediction over the family and this particular person that's going to get the blessing. And so they trusted God that God was going to do the very thing that he was asking, and he was going to give this blessing to Esau. Just then, verse 41, in verse 41, it says, Now Esau hated Jacob because of the blessing which his father had blessed him. Sorry, I'm in the wrong spot. Go to 27, verse 5. This is what I meant to say. Now Rebekah was listening when Isaac spoke to his son Esau. So Esau went to the field to hunt for game and bring it, and Rebekah said to her son Jacob, I heard your father speak to your brother Esau. So here's the deal. Isaac tells Esau, look, get this food and prepare it, and I'm going to give you the blessing. And his own wife, Rebekah, hears it, immediately goes to Jacob and says, Jacob, here's what we're going to do. I got a plan. I'm going to make some food that your father loves. So go get a couple of goats, bring them in. I'm going to make the food. What I want you to do, I want you to put on Esau's clothing so you smell like Esau. I'm not sure what that means, but it sounds like there wasn't a lot of deodorant and stuff like that. But anyway, so he gets on Esau's clothing, and evidently Esau's kind of a hairy guy, so they made like a little like fur on the hands. And says, I want you to go up to your father and tell him, you know, that you are Esau and you're ready for the blessing. And he's, you know, and he does it. His mother literally kind of manipulated Jacob into going and tricking her own, you know, her own husband. And he does it. And then he gets the blessing. And then here's what happens right after there. This is what I was trying to read earlier in verse 41. Now Esau hated Jacob because of the blessing which his father had blessed him. And Esau said to himself, the days of mourning for my father are approaching, and then I will kill my brother Jacob. But the words of Esau, her older son, were told to Rebekah. So she sent and called Jacob, her youngest son, and said to him, behold, your brother Esau comforts himself about you by planning to kill you. Now therefore, my son, obey my voice. Arise, flee to Laban, my brother in Haran, and stay with him a while until your brother's fury turns away, until your brother's anger turns away from you, and he forgets what you have done to him. Then I will send and bring you there, bring you from there, and why should I be reft of you both in one day? So here's what happened. Rebekah sees this opportunity, and maybe it's because she heard the oracle, maybe because she was thinking, okay, well, if the older is going to serve the younger, then it must be my son, Jacob, must rise up. Maybe that's what she was thinking. Now, it doesn't say that, but she is definitely going to make sure that happens, right? She's going to take control of the situation. She brings her other son, you go in and trick dad, and this is how we're going to work it out. But then, as soon as that happens, Esau comes in, and he's ready to get his blessing. Isaac sees him and says, whoa, wait a second, what happened? I just gave the blessing. Isaac is trembling because he's upset. Esau realizes he's been tricked, he's been duped, and now he hates his brother, and now he's going to kill his brother. And the very thing Rebekah wanted, she's going to lose because the son now has to run for his life. It's going to send him on a journey, and it never really says that, you know, they reunited. She lost her son. And then this last verse is what hit me. Verse 46, now Rebekah said to Isaac, I loathe my life because of the Hittite women. If Jacob marries one of the Hittite women like these, one of the women of the land, what good will my life be to me? I was thinking, that's the verse that hit me. She's basically saying, okay, if I have to lose my son, if he has to run away, at least if he doesn't marry the wrong woman, then I'll at least be happy. She has a life plan for her son. And she knows exactly what's best for him. He's going to have to end up getting the birthright and the blessing, and he's got to marry the right woman. She is just dead set. This is what's going to happen. And I think in her own protective nature as a mom, which, listen, I hear that. And for all the right reasons, we want the best for our children. But she's going to control it. She's going to make it happen the way she sees fit. And as a result, here's what happened. She lost her son. Her son's, you know, are at odds, danger. She doesn't get to see her son again.
The need for control is a double-edged sword. You know, I kind of understand why a parent would want so much to protect their kids, because you know when you have children, at the beginning, you're controlling all of their actions. But there comes a point in time when you've got to let go. And I think Rebecca had trouble letting go, and she wanted what was best for her son Jacob. She had heard the oracle. She understood completely that he was going to be the one that God's blessing would go through. But she tried to control all of these things, and as a result, it cost her everything. You know, in my life, I understand. You know, I'm a parent, but I also, you know what it's like to grow up in a home where my mom was just not a control person. That wasn't her issue. And I made some decisions as I got later into my teenage years, and I got into a relationship that lasted for 4 years. And that relationship, on into the time I was almost 21, really took me away from God. And I know that there were people who probably, who knew me well and knew the person, they could see it coming. They knew it was heading in the wrong direction. But you know, my mom just kind of allowed it to happen. And that relationship, even though it took me away from God, it ended in kind of a humiliating way to me. And, you know, I was heartbroken. And but it was the first time in my life I actually needed God. And through that extremely difficult time, I started to pray, to reach out to God. And it was in that time where I really started to understand he was more than just a savior, but he was the Lord of my life. And I needed that. In fact, I would say that it's one of the most pivotal moments of my young life that that God showed me that he is the Lord over my whole life. And it took a breakup to make that happen. And I asked my mom years later, I said, Mom, I said, why didn't you say anything to me? Why didn't you tell me? If you knew this was going to happen, I'm like, you knew it was going to happen. She's like, yes. I said, but why didn't you say anything? And she said, you know, Ed, would have made any difference? And the answer is no. It really wouldn't have. It would have either put me in a situation where I had to obey my mom and, you know, lose this person who I thought was so important to me. Or it would have put us in a position where I chose her over my mom, and that would have caused a bad relationship for my mom and I. But my mom just prayed for me. She just trusted that God was going to use it, and he certainly did. That's why the need for control is a double-edged sword, because you've got to learn to trust God even over the things we're trying to control. And I would say to, you know, to anyone, you know, who's here today that, you know, why would God use an imperfect person like us? Well, that's the picture of the gospel, that Jesus came down to die on the cross to pay the penalty for sinners so that imperfect people like you and I could be made whole with God. His blood washes over our sin, cleans us up so that we can be made right in Christ. And that is then puts us in a position where God wants to use us to reach others. And in Westerville, there's almost 80,000 people that live in the two zip codes. 56,000 of those would claim they're not religious. And that doesn't really say that all 56,000 people are Christians. It just means that they say that they would at least would attend a church once in a while. And we know that the majority of those are far from God. And so here we are, you know, people who are trying to follow Jesus, and God is trying to write his perfect story through our imperfect lives. That by the power of the gospel, as he changes us from the inside out, we become the beacons of hope for the people in our community that need the Lord. And I would say to all of us today that if you are, you know, if you consider yourself a follower of Christ, you need to submit your life to the Lord and allow him to speak through you to others. And I would also say to people who maybe are feeling far from God, that today is a great day for you to receive the gospel into your heart by praying a prayer where you say to the Lord, Lord, I am sorry for my sin. Please forgive me. I believe in your son. I believe in what he's done. I know that he's raised, and I want to follow him as my Lord. I submit my life to you. And in that prayer, you're submitting your heart to God, and God will make you right with him through his son and what he did on the cross. Well, I just want to thank you all for being here today. Let's stand and worship together.